Well, greetings everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on the New Age Bible when we come back. You know, Charles Lyell was one of the pillars of modern geology, and he published his Principles of Geology back in the early 1800s. Lyell's concepts are so widely accepted today that most people who believe these concepts don't even know who it was that originated them. But it's from Lyell's system of reasoning that a doctrine of origins was devised by simply projecting all of the natural processes back through time indefinitely. And in that way, catastrophes like Noah's flood have been strictly ruled out. This process now goes under the banner of science. Well, listen to this. The sun is shrinking. That was a Newswire report reported by the United Press. And it made that surprising statement. Now, the sun's diameter appears to have been decreasing by about 0.1% per century. Scientists have been watching for over 100 years now, and the evidence is now conclusive. Every hour, the sun is shrinking by about 5 feet. Now, if the sun is shrinking 0.1% per century, then it totals 1% per millennium. If the sun existed only 100,000 years ago, then it would have been double its present diameter. And only 20 million years ago, the surface of the sun would be touching the Earth. Now, as far as researchers can tell, this rate of shrinkage has been consistent since the origin of the sun, you know, following Lyell's principle or theory. Now, 65 million years ago, remember they told us that the dinosaurs died out, but 20 million years ago, the sun would have been touching the Earth. And after all, this is science, isn't it? Now, this is just one more of the many examples of evolutionary propaganda that masquerades under the banner of science. And it's one more of the many lessons that we teach here in our Mosaic Law School. We conduct that school twice a year here in Isabella, Missouri. If you'd like more information, why don't you call and order our free general law CD package first. That's the place to start. It's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. Remember, it's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. And best of all, it's free, and you can call and order one right now. The number is 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Click onto the archives page, and you can download that free general law CD package right there. That's georgegordon.org. All right, we're reviewing a couple of three books here. We're discussing a topic over here called the New Age Bible Versions, written by a lady by the name of Gail Ripplinger. She wrote three books, 2,000 pages total. Let me give you the address so that you can order these three books, because if you're not interested, then save your money. If you're interested in identifying with specificity, for instance, those 15 verses that have been dropped out of two of the 14 versions, or if you want to see where and what are those 64,000 words that have been dropped from the scripture in these New Age versions and the various versions, there's 14 of them. Well, this is the lady that has done the exhausting work. She spent 6 years at it, and she's got the qualifications and the credentials to do it and carry it out, and she did it, and she wrote three books. And book number one here is called The New Age Bible Versions. The second is called Hazardous Materials. And the third one is Which Bible is God's Word? These three books are published by the AV Publishing Company, AV Publications Corporation, they call themselves. They're located at Post Office Box 280, Ararat, Virginia, A-R-A-R-A-T, Virginia, USA, 24053. Their phone number is 1-800-435-4535. Again, that's 1-800-435-4535. Now remember, if you're ever having a problem finding one of these underground books, you want to go to bravenewbookstore.com. Bravenewbookstore.com. Their phone's 512-480-2503. Again, that's 512-480-2503. Now, as you go through life, you're going to find a lot of books that you'd like to get a hold of, and you haven't got a clue as to where to find them. So I just told you. There's an underground bookstore in Austin, Texas, and they'll find it for you. All right, now last time we were talking about anti-Semitism as it relates to Jesus. Jesus, remember, Jesus today would be called anti-Semitic, and that's because he said of those Pharisees, the Pharisees and the scribes, remember, today those people without a break in their descent are now labeled the learned elders of Zion. So if you want to know what their name is today, it's been changed to the learned elders of Zion. Now, the reason that we know this is we take a look back here, and the Jewish religion traces its descent today from those ancient Pharisees. Let me bring you back here to page 51 here of the book on Esau, Edom, And we'll see that here. The Jewish religion as it is today traces its descent without a break through all of the centuries from the Pharisees. Their leading ideas and methods found expression in a literature of enormous extent, of which a very great deal is still in existence. The Talmud is the largest and most important single member of that literature. And the source of that statement now is the Universal Jewish Encyclopedia, Volume 8, page 474, the 1942 edition. So there's the source of authority. Now there's a second factor that comes in here. This Talmud is derived from Canaanite and Babylonian sources. So if we wanted to prove that one, we would look at another source over here on page 52. Judaism is not only derived from Babylonian thought, but also from Canaanite religious practices. Footnote number 8, the Universal Jewish Encyclopedia, volume 6, page 235, 1942 again. So again, when we want to find out where this came from, you simply take a look at the authors themselves. They're not hiding anything. The Jews are very open and upfront. They're just telling you this is where it is, where it came from. Maybe you've never heard this before, because most people are afraid of being branded as anti-Semitic. Now, Jesus wasn't. He said of the Pharisees, he specifically pointed out their characteristics, and he stated that they were hypocrites, a generation of vipers, full of dead men's bones, and of all uncleanness, blind guides, a wicked and adulterous generation, full of iniquity, serpents, murderers, and of their father, the devil. And because of Christ's exposure of these traits and ways of these Talmudic Jews, they could not easily continue in their ungodly practices. These Jews thus sought to kill him, as we read in John 8, verses 37 through the end of the chapter. And eventually they succeeded. Now, in today's thought-controlled world, Jesus would be considered a hater and an anti-Semite. And this is clear because the Jews have made it known that the New Testament is the most anti-Semitic book ever written. That's what the Jews... Well, I mean, I guess that's the logical response. If somebody attacks you, you would say, well, they're a bunch of no-goods, and their writings are all anti-Semitic. They're anti-this, or they're anti-that, and they're wicked and evil. Looking at Judaism here from the Jewish Encyclopedia, Judaism denotes the Jewish faith in its extravagant form of blind attachment to rites and traditions and national exclusiveness. This must have been prevalent in the time of Christ because of his constant exposure of their formalism and self-assumption, and because in John's Gospel, the Jews is used as synonymous with opposers of Christ and of his teachings. Now that's an excerpt taken from the Popular and Critical Bible Encyclopedia, Volume 2, page 999, published in 1901. A factual statement, as revealed here, would not be printed today out of fear of being labeled anti-Semitic. Now, I showed you last time that this term anti-Semitic was created about 1890, created by the Jews, as a smear word. Listen to this. We'll show you how this comes down. Semitic, looking in Webster's dictionary here, Semite, S-E-M-I-T-E, is a member of any of the peoples whose language is Semitic, including the Hebrews, Arabs, and Phoenicians. Semitic, one of or like the Semites, describing a group of languages of southwestern Asia and northern Africa, including Hebrew, Aramaic, Arabic. Now listen, boys and girls, the Arabs, who are the prime targets of the Jews as being anti-Semitic, are in fact Semites. Now there are 12 tribes of these Arabs, just like there are 12 tribes of Israelites. The Jews constitute 1/12 of the tribes of Israel. 1 out of 12. There's 11 more tribes, 11 more families. Well, the Arabs divided into 12 families also, and both of these families are descended from Abraham. You can ask any Arab where he's descended, and he'll tell you he comes from Abraham. It's only the white Anglo-Saxon Christians that haven't got a clue as to where they came from, which tells you a little bit more about the ignorance that's prevalent and is being taken advantage of by, guess who? The learned elders of Zion. Now, we're not picking on Jews just to be picking on somebody. The average Jew, as I mentioned before, doesn't know any more about Judaism than the average Catholic knows about Catholicism. He's a member because he was born into it, and he just follows it because that's the way it's always been. We're born into our religions. And we don't know about, for instance, if you're a Catholic, you don't know much about the Knights of Columbus or the Jesuit order. You know they're Catholic, and you know they're good because you're a Catholic and all Catholic organizations are good, but you don't really know much about their history or about what they do or what they've done in the past. Now, let's see if we can get a second opinion here concerning anti-Semitism. In an interview with Harold Rosenthal, now Harold Rosenthal was an administrative assistant to Jacob Javits back in the 1960s and 70s. Jacob Javits was the senator from New York in those days, and he was a Jew. Harold Rosenthal was a Jew. And Rosenthal was interviewed by a fellow, let's see if I can remember his name here, but I got his name was White. Harold Rosenthal was interviewed by a fellow by the name of White. I can't think of his first name now. Back about 1974, 5, 6, along in there. And it's called the Rosenthal Interview, and it was published, and I picked up this publication somewhere. But anyway, Rosenthal made this observation here when when White asked this question. He said, Mr. Rosenthal, I don't hate anybody. I hate what the Jews are doing to us, and especially as it relates to any and everything related to Christianity. I hate their deceit, trickery, cunning, and their detestable dishonesty. Does that make me anti-Semitic? And Rosenthal answered, he said, anti-Semitism does not signify opposition to Semitism. There's no such thing. It's an expression that we Jews use effectively as a smear word used to brand as bigot, like you guys, anyone who brings criticism against Jews. We use it against hate mongers. All right, so these are people who call themselves the chosen people. And if you're opposed to them, well, then you're a hate monger. That makes you anti-Semitic. And so this is directed against the Semites, the Arabs. Well, what kind of sense does that make? Well, it makes all the sense in the world if, in fact, you are the bad guy and you want to brand the good guys as being bad. You want to turn the world upside down. Hey, it's worked like a shot. Let's give credit where credit's due. And Henry Ford, remember the guy that created the Ford automobile and the Ford Motor Company? Well, Henry Ford had something to say about this. In fact, he wrote a book on the subject. It was called The World's Foremost Problem. Henry Ford Sr., called The International Jew. You can get a copy of that, too, from BreakTheNewBookstore.com. And this book that I'm citing this from now is called Who is Edom Esau or Esau Edom by Charles Wiseman. You can get a copy of that from Brave New Bookstore also. Here's what Ford said. He said, half the confusion which men meet in their efforts to account for the world is due to their ignorance of just where is the Jew. He's always a key. But if the key is disguised as something else, then how can it be used? That came from the International Jew, Dearborn Publishing Company, 1921, Volume 2, page 245. And I think Henry Ford put his finger right on the pulse of the problem. If you can't identify the problem, then there's nothing you can do about it. And this is a problem. This is a world takeover. It's a geopolitical move of genius. And it's created by and it's executed by Satan himself, using this group of people, this secret society. And they're just one secret society out of many. So last week I pointed out to you a number of these secret societies, and they're all a part of this program. But the one that's charged with changing the Bible, polluting the Bible, perverting the Bible, is the Learned Elders of Zion. And boy, have they done a job. I mean, they've succeeded. It's past tense. It's already done. Now, to quote the Jew Maurice Samuels, he said, I suspected from the first dawning of Jewish self-consciousness that between you Gentiles, white Christians, and us Jews lies an unbridgeable gulf. Number 29, Maurice Samuels, You Gentiles, 1924, page 9. Now, again, we wouldn't have known this if we hadn't had some of the insiders telling us these answers. And so what I'm doing here is reading to you the answers that come from Jewish publications, the Jewish Encyclopedia, various rabbis and so on, who have told us, here's what we're going to do. And then I'm reporting to you, here's what they have done, past tense. And here's what they are doing right now, present perfect tense. And here's what they're going to continue to do. And we'll get that from Bible prophecy. The historical rule of the white race was the yoke of Jacob on Esau's neck, which Esau was prophesied to break someday. And this yoke could only be broken by Esau gaining the dominion or rule over Jacob, which has now been done. For Esau to rule or have the dominion in a nation over Jacob's descendants, we must establish Esau's principles of law and government, which is called socialism. We must establish Esau's religion, which is Judaism. We must establish Esau's code of morals, which is Talmudic ethics. We must establish Esau's method of economics, and that's credit, debt, and usury. And as well as Esau's way of life, which is a Judaic society, thus bringing about the destruction of white rule and white society, which has now been accomplished. I don't know if you're aware of this, but I'll just pass it on to you. Here in the United States, and I can't speak for the rest of the world, I haven't looked this up, but I happened to pick up a publication yesterday, and here's what I discovered. In our Congress, this is our federal government now in Washington, D.C., we have 535 members, 100 in the Senate and 435 in the House. Out of that body of 535, there are 138 white Anglo-Saxon representatives. The rest of them are all Catholics, Jews, Muslims, Hispanics, other races and nationalities. Only 138. So let's just take 138 here and divide that by 535, 25.7%. So about one-fourth of our Congress now is made up of members that represent 67% or two-thirds of the people in the country. So tuck that one away in your heart. And, oh, by the way, we have a new Supreme Court nominee on the way. Her name is Kagan. She's a Jew. The entire membership of the Supreme Court, when this lady is confirmed, will be made up of Jews and Catholics. There will be no white Protestant representatives on the Supreme Court. Zero. That's pretty significant. That whole branch of government will have been taken over then by the strangers that reside within our gates. And in case you didn't know what these strangers are, there's a prophecy here in Deuteronomy 28. Let me see if I can find it for you here. Deuteronomy 28, verse 40, 3, the stranger that's within you shall get up high above you very high, and you shall come down very low. He shall lend unto thee, and you shall not lend unto him. He shall be the head, and you shall be the tail. Now take a look at where the Jewish banking industry is in America. Who's the head, and who's the tail? Huh? Tuck that one away in your hearts, here, boys and girls. Now the day when the Jew was first admitted to civil rights, the Christian state was in danger. The entrance of the Jew into the white society marked the destruction of the state, meaning the state, the white Christian state. That was uttered by Bernard Lazare, Anti-Semitism, Its History and Causes, on page 162. So he just told you where it's at, boys and girls. And all God is doing is reconfirming or reaffirming here in Deuteronomy 28:43 what this Jew, Bernard Lazare, has just revealed to you. Now, the Jewish Talmud allows the use of usury by recognizing several different modes of obtaining increase or interest from money loaned. Now, you can get that from the Jewish Encyclopedia, 1905, volume 12, page 389. In the Talmud, it states, it is allowed to cheat a Gentile or a non-Jew and take usury from him, Baba Kama, 113a. The Bible, however, prohibits any and all increase or interest when there is a loan of money, and you'll see that in Deuteronomy 23, verse 19. The Jews do not follow the Bible. The Jews follow the Talmud as their code to live by. And the Jew Samuel Roth explains the Jew's economic role. He said, we see the Jew then in business as promoter, moneylender, salesman par excellence, the author and chief instigator of a system of credit by which a nationwide usury rises like a golem, a created monster, with a million hands on a million throats to choke the honor and the freedom of movement of a hardworking people. Footnote number 11, that's cited from Samuel Roth, Jews Must Live, 1934, page 123. The existence of today's banking system, that is, the taking of money on deposit and then loaning it out at interest, actually gave rise in modern times through the endeavors of the Jewish Rothschild banking family of Europe. The financial career of the Rothschilds is the key to the history of Jewish banking in the 19th century. The plan adopted by him of establishing branches in the more important European capitals over which he placed his sons was followed by another Jewish banking house. The influence of Jews on banking was due to the primary advantage given to them by their international position. And that's cited from the Jewish Encyclopedia, 1902, volume 2, page 492 and 493. Now, the other Jewish families that adopted the Rothschild plan of establishing local banking branches in European cities include the Lazards, Sterns, Spares, Seligmans, Warburgs, and the Loeb families. Other central banks were established in Europe which would also branch out their operations. Warburg founded a bank in Hamburg, Germany in 1798. Jewish bankers played an important part in the development of joint stock banks. Ludwig Bemberger and Hermann Marcuse were among the founders of the Deutsche Bank in 1870. Among other important Jewish banks was the Bank of Paris, 1872. Jewish bankers played a leading part in the foundation of the Banca Commerciale Italiana, and the Credito Italiano, leading private banks in Hungary, were also of Jewish origin. Footnote 15, Encyclopedia Judaica, Volume 4, Banking and Bankers, pages 174 to 176. Now, Esau's crowning achievement in gaining financial dominion over Jacob occurred with the establishment of the Federal Reserve Act, which was signed by Woodrow Wilson on December 23, 1913. The chief architect of this plan was the Edomite Jew, Paul Warburg, of Kuhn, Loeb & Company. The legislation created a corporation, the Federal Reserve Bank, whose stock is owned and controlled by Jewish banking firms in Europe. Footnote 16. Controlling stock in the Federal Reserve System is owned principally by 8 international Jewish banks, including 1, the Rothschild Banks of London and Berlin, the Lazare's Brothers Bank of Paris, Israel Moses Schief of Italy, the Warburg Bank of Hamburg, Germany, Lehman Brothers of New York, Kuhn Loeb & Company of Germany and New York, Chase Manhattan, that's the Rockefeller Bank of New York, and Goldman Sachs Bank of New York. Have you heard that name, Goldman Sachs, recently in the news? Did you remember how you bailed them out, you know, with this TARP money? All right. Now, if some alien force wished to covertly take over a nation, no surer method could be devised than by supplanting the nation's money with their own. As President James A. Garfield said, whoever controls the volume of money in any country is absolute master of all industry and commerce. Now, this is the situation that exists with the Jewish Federal Reserve Bank in the United States. The descendants of Esau have truly brought about the mark of the beast, so that no man might buy or sell, save he that had the mark, as we read in Revelation 13, verses 16 and 17. No one in the nation can buy, sell, or trade unless they use the Jewish script called Federal Reserve Notes, credit cards, and bank checks. Now, there is an exception to that rule. You know, you and I don't have to deal in credit cards, bank checks, and Federal Reserve notes. We have gold and silver. It is a problem learning how to use it. I don't deny that. But we're not locked out of just weights and balances. We have those available. And tuck this one away in your heart. Before you get mad and blame all the Jews and want to run out and kill them all, remember now, they were created by God. And like the Amalekites, the Philistines, the Moabites, and other enemies of Israel, they could have no power over us whatsoever unless we give it to them. And how do we give it to them? Well, we borrow their money, we use their Federal Reserve notes, their credit cards. In short, instead of saying, no, we're going to obey God and keep His commandments, we are in violation of the law of God, and we're practicing the law of the Talmud. Now, if you want to practice Talmudic law, which is embraced by the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto, and send your children to public school, pay income tax, use Social Security, use banks, and credit instruments like the second plank, the fifth plank, the eighth plank, and the tenth plank to the Communist Manifesto, just to take four out of the ten. You know, that's a choice that you have to make, and I have to make, and everybody else. I'm not complaining about the Jews. I'm not complaining about the IRS or the Federal Reserve. I don't use their banks. I don't use their Social Security. I don't pay their taxes. I obey God. I keep His commandments. That's what He told us to do. And as long as we do that, they have no power over us. But if you want to sign on the dotted line and take a mortgage on your house and borrow the money at usury and violate the law of God, well, then there's going to be a penalty to pay, and that's what's happening in America today. We're simply paying the penalties for the violations of our law. Our law, remember, came from our God, the Creator. And this law that we're practicing comes from the Babylonian Talmud. It's the law of Edom Esau. Now, going on over here, there's a fellow here by the name of Harry Dexter White. He was a Jewish fellow, an economist. Harry Dexter White, 1892 to 1948, U.S. economist, born in Boston, Massachusetts. Well, in 1938, White was made director of the Monetary Research Institute. His monetary proposals were accepted as the basis for the Bretton Woods Conference, attended by representatives of 44 nations. Footnote 17, Encyclopedia Judaica, Volume 16, page 481, 1971. Harry Dexter White, you want to know where your monetary system comes from? Well, there it is. And on page 84, the world program that follows is a Jewish program. Jewry's political outlook is world rule in the material sense. Jewry is an international nation. It is this and nothing else which gives significance to its financial, educational, propagandist, revolutionary, and immigration programs. Now take a look at immigration just as an illustration. We've been invaded here in the United States by about 20 million Mexicans from Latin America. And where does this immigration policy come from? Well, it started in 1963 under President Kennedy, and it has been extended to this day through Republicans and Democrats, and don't get mad at any particular political party. Until today, we have an invasion army in the country, and now when the white Protestants down in Arizona said, hey, wait a minute, these people have to obey the laws, immigration laws, you got all the Mexicans down there saying, oh, no, these people are hardworking, good people, let them all in. In 1960, there was, out of our population, 90% were white. 10% all others. Today is 67% white and 33% all others. By the year 2050, it will be 50% white and 50% all others. Which brings to mind, the stranger that's within your gates shall get up above you very high, and you shall come down very low. America has been destroyed past tense. It is not in the process of being destroyed. It has already been conquered. And I read that to you the other day. So the Americans, the white Anglo-Saxon Protestants, have been defeated. It's been a battle. It's been a war. And this war is now over, and we have been defeated, and we've been taken into national captivity, which fulfills the prophecy of Leviticus chapter 26. Our God told us, now he gave us fair warning. He said, now if you people give me the finger and you don't practice my law, I'm going to put you into national captivity. And that's where we're at. And we're going to serve these people now for a period of time. Now they're going to be destroyed. I mean, this yoke of bondage is going to be taken off our necks. But it isn't going to be taken off until we have learned our lesson. Boy, have we got a lesson to learn. Hey, it's halfway time here. Let me give you a reminder here that you're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, and that we're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States and around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from a scriptural perspective. Now, that's 8 schools and all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. And the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives. All of it can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the Law School at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, go to our website, georgegordon.org. Click on to the archives page, and you can download that free general law CD package right there, georgegordon.org, and then go to our archives page. The sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements or recommendations that we give don't mean that the authors or publications that we're endorsing are necessarily going to reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications cited here on the Law Hour may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoints may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review either. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine. They're mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. So if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're reviewing three books written by a lady by the name of Gail Ripplinger. I've given you the information now on hazardous materials. The New Age Bible, and which Bible is the correct one? It's the King James. Which Bible is God's Word? It's the King James. She has seven proofs of that in her book on hazardous materials, and she identifies the writers of all of these lexicons and one thing and another, all these various and sundry books that have been altered and perverted by the learned elders of Zion. And while she didn't identify, you know, she's not anti-Semitic now. Don't get her wrong. She did not identify who it was that's doing this. She can't figure it out. She said she didn't understand why her books were being rejected by the Bible bookstore. And I just wanted to tell you that this is the group of people that control what you and I read in the mainstream press. All of the press is controlled by the learned elders of Zion. We'll take a look here at the protocols, and I'll show you that. Let me see if I can flip over here to the one on... the press. It's kind of an eye-opener here. Here's the press. We shall handle the press in the following manner. We shall saddle it and keep tight rein upon it. We shall do the same also with other printed matter, for of what use is it to rid ourselves of attacks in the press if we remain exposed to criticism through pamphlets and books? So right away, the writers of the Learned Elders back in 1884 said, hey, listen, you know, let's wake up and smell a coffee here. In our quest to take over the world, if we're going to do that, we have to have control of the press. We have to be able to control propaganda. Number two, not one announcement will reach the people save under our supervision. We have attained this at the present time to the extent that all news is received through several agencies in which it is centralized from all parts of the world. And number three, literature and journalism are two most important educational forces, and consequently our government will become the owner of most of the journals. If we permit 10 private journals, we shall organize 30 of our own, and so on. This must not be suspected by the public, for which reason all of the journals published by us will be externally of the most contrary opinions and tendencies, thus evoking confidence in them and attracting our unsuspecting opponents, who thus will be caught in our trap and rendered harmless. That's the 12th protocol. And, you know, there are publications and news journals like 60 Minutes, The Lair News Hour, CBS News, Frontline, Dateline. Now, ABC, CBS, Fox News, these are all controlled arms of the mainstream press. And while they, in some cases, appear to be controversial and opposed to one another, they're all controlled from the same group, the Committee of 300 through the Bank of International Settlements. And each one of these secret societies has an assignment. They have a position here. You know, the Trilateral Commission, they do their part. The CFR, they do their part with foreign policy decision. And Skull and Bones, they do their part. And all of these people that are involved are working for and working toward this new world order, this one world government. Now, Jewry's political outlook is world rule in the material sense. Jewry is an international nation. It is this and nothing else, which gives significance to its financial, educational, propagandist, revolutionary, and immigration program. Now, that's number 26, the International Jew, Dearborn Publishing Company, Volume 3, 1921, page 178. Now, here's a statement by a guy that knows his onions here. He's a Jew. His name is Baruch Levy. And back in the mid-1800s, he had clearly expressed the ultimate goals of the Jews. And then he said, the Jewish people as a whole will be its own Messiah. It will attain world dominion by the dissolution of other races, by the abolition of frontiers and annihilation of monarchy, and by the establishment of a world republic in which the Jews will everywhere exercise the privilege of citizenship. In this new world order, the Jews will furnish all of the leaders without encountering any opposition. The governments of the different peoples forming the World Republic will fall without difficulty into the hands of the Jews. It will then be possible for the Jewish rulers to abolish private property and everywhere to make use of the resources of the state. Thus will the purpose of the Talmud be fulfilled, in which it is said that when the Messianic time has come, the Jews will have all of the property of the whole world in their hands. That's footnote number 27, Baruch Levy, from a letter to Karl Marx called The Review, or published in La Revue de Paris, page 574, June 1st, 1928. Let me highlight that in yellow so that I'll have that one in my notes. All right, next item over here, a Jew by the name of Marcus Eli Ravage states, the dominion is a reality. You Christians, he said, make a lot of noise and fury about the undue Jewish influence in your theaters and movie palaces. Well, very good. Granted, your complaint is well-founded. But what is that compared to our staggering influence in your churches, your schools, your laws, and your governments, and the very thoughts that you think every day? We took you in hand and pulled down the beautiful and generous structure that you had created, and changed the whole course of your history. We conquered you as no empire of yours ever subjugated Africa or Asia. And we did it all without armies. We did it without bullets. And we did it without blood or turmoil. We did it without force of any kind. We did it solely by the irresistible might of our spirit, with our ideas, and with our propaganda. Now that's what Gail Ripplinger has pointed out. She says, hey, listen, these guys have taken over the seminaries. They've taken over the college and universities, and they are teaching our preachers, and our preachers, you know, go to college, and they get their DDs, and then they go out and they start preaching from these new, these 14 various versions of the Bible, which have been corrupted, but not totally, just 20%. These people are geniuses. I mean, you know, come on, let's give credit where credit's due. This guy isn't whistling Dixie. He said, we conquered you as no empire of yours has ever subjugated Asia or Africa. We did it all without armies, bullets, blood, or turmoil, without force of any kind. We did it by the irresistible might of our spirit, ideas, and propaganda. Hell, you voted us into office. You people are paying your taxes and bailing the banks out. You know, you have to laugh because what are you going to do, cry? Now remember, we brought this on ourselves. It is true that the Jews did it to us, but they never had any power over us as long as we were obeying God and keeping his commandments. It was you and I, boys and girls, who gave our God the finger and said, we will not obey your law and you will not be our king. He said, okay, no problem. I'll butt out. You'll read this in 1 Samuel chapter 8. It's very illuminating. Go back to 1 Samuel chapter 8, about 20 verses there. And he also made this observation. He said, you'll cry out to me on that day because of this king, Barack Obama, that you're going to elect over you. And he says, I will not hear you. So I always tell my students when they come in here, I mean, you can pray to Jesus if you want to, but he's already told you, you ain't listening to this crap. I'm not going to listen to you. Now, the bad news is I'm not going to listen to you, and here's what I'm going to do to you. And you'll read that in Leviticus 26 and Deuteronomy 28. These are not good people. These people hate us, and maybe they've got a good point. You see, Jacob, if you'll remember the story here back in Genesis 25, he stole Esau's birthright, and that's what this battle is over. It's over this birthright, nothing more, nothing less, just over money, nothing personal, just business. And so as a result of that, they have come to the conclusion that they need to get it back, and they're in the process of doing just that. And they plan to kill every Christian that draws breath on planet Earth. Every Christian, they plan to kill them. So you'll do well if you'd forget about the Mithraism and sun worship and practicing the laws of these various and sundry gods, you know, like Zeus and Jupiter, you know, and Saturn and one another. I mean, you might be thinking about going back to practicing the law of God. There's still a chance. I mean, there's still a little opening here, not much, but there's a little bit of an opening left here. Now, there's more. Rabbi Reichhorn. You probably never heard the name Rabbi Reichhorn speaking at the funeral of Grand Rabbi Simeon ben Judah. In 1869, here's what he said. He says, thanks to the terrible power of our international banks, we have forced the Christians into wars without number. Wars have a special value for Jews. Since Christians massacre each other and make more room for us Jews, wars are the Jews' harvest. The Jew banks grow fat on Christian wars. Over 100 million Christians have been swept off the face of the earth by wars, and the end is not yet. Okay? Footnote number 7. Henry Ford also noted that it was a Jew who said, wars are the Jews' harvest, but no harvest is so rich as civil wars. The International Jew, The World's Foremost Problem, Volume 3, page 180. And then the Jew, Marcus Eli Ravage, speaking to Christians in a series of articles in Century Magazine, Volume 115, Number 3, January 1928, on page 347. He said, you have not begun to appreciate the real depth of our guilt. We are intruders. We are subverters. We have taken your natural world, your ideas, your destiny, and played havoc with them. We have been at the bottom not merely of the latest great war, World War I, but of nearly all of your wars and revolutions in your history. We have brought discord and confusion and frustration into your personal and public life, and we're still doing it. No one can tell how long we shall go on doing it. Who knows what great and glorious destiny might have been yours if we had left you alone. Footnote number 8, Century Magazine, Volume 115, Number 3, January 1928, page 347. So here again, you know, here's a rabbi comes on and says, hey, let me tell you where it's at. Count Mensdorf, the Jewish-Austrian ambassador to England after World War I, 1918, here's what he said. He said, Israel, the Jews, won the war, World War I. We made it, thrived on it, profited from it. It was our supreme revenge on Christianity. Our supreme revenge on Christianity. Now, let's take a look here at religion in the protocols. Here's what the Jews have in store for religious people. They tell us this. They say, it is for this reason that we must undermine faith, eradicate from the minds of the Gentiles the very principles of God and soul, and replace these conceptions by mathematical calculations and material desires. Here comes science and evolution. When we become rulers, we shall regard as undesirable the existence of any religion except our own, proclaiming one God, with whom our fate is tied as the chosen people, and by whom our fate has been made one with the fate of the world. It is for this reason that we must destroy all other religions. If thereby should emerge contemporary atheists, then as a transition step, this will not interfere with our aims. And a world coalition of Gentiles could cope with us temporarily, but we're assured against this by roots of dissension among them so deep that they cannot be torn out. We have created antagonism between the personal and national interests of the Gentiles by arousing religious and race hatreds, which we have nourished in their hearts for 20 centuries. And we will so wear out and exhaust the Gentiles by all of this that they will be compelled to offer us an international authority, which by its position will enable us to absorb without disturbance all of the governmental forces of the world and thus form a super government. Isn't that called the United Nations, boys and girls? We must so direct the education of Gentile society that its hands will drop in the weakness of discouragement in the face of any undertaking where initiative is needed. Hey, these boys intend to take over the world, destroy all of the world's religions, plural, and establish their own one-world government with their one-world religion and their one-world taxing authority. And indeed, they intend to reduce the Earth's population by 90%. They're called useless eaters. I've reported on that in the past. But now, getting back to the point with Gail Ripplinger here. Her complaint is that these people have changed the Bible, and indeed they have. Remember, this one Jew, he said, we control your thoughts. Well, yeah, that's right. They have written the books that control your thoughts. Now, why have you allowed them to do that? I mean, I'm not here criticizing you. If that's what you want to do, you certainly have the right to do that, and you have done it. It's already an accomplished fact. I'm not reporting here today anything that's going to happen in the future that hasn't already happened in the past. These guys have already succeeded. They've already conquered us. It's a past tense issue. In fact, Harold Rosenthal back in 1976 said, the war is over. We've already conquered you. We just haven't made the announcement yet. That's all that's left is for them to make the announcement. And one of these days they'll do that. They've made the announcement through the years. That's what I'm reading to you now. They've been telling us this, you know, for the last 150 years. Here's what we're going to do. And they've already done it. You didn't listen to them. You know, my dad and his dad and his dad evidently did not believe that these people were serious or that they could carry it out. Wouldn't they be surprised if they were alive today? Now, another Jew put it this way. He said, it was the Jews who first permitted kings to maintain costly armies of mercenaries. In Spain, it was largely the part of Jewish finance that allowed the king to defeat the Arabs. That was written by Abram Leon, The Jewish Question, Pathfinder Press, 1950, page 166. Edom shall be a desolate wilderness for the violence against the children of Judah, because they have shed innocent blood in the land. Now notice these people call themselves the chosen people. Listen to this. Over here in Revelation 2, verse 9, let me read to you the story. There are some people running around here calling themselves Jews that aren't. And here's God. He says to us, and under the angel of the church in Smyrna, write these things. These things saith the first and the last, which was dead and is alive. He said, I know your works in tribulation and poverty, but you are rich. And I know the blasphemy of them which say that they are Jews and are not, but are of the synagogue of Satan. He said they're of the synagogue of Satan. These people are changing the Bible. Remember when we started this discussion, I showed you in it's Revelation chapter 22, verse 18. He said, anybody that adds to this, I'm going to add to him the plagues written in the book. Anybody that takes away from it, and I'm going to take his name out of the book of life. Hey, these people have done all of that. And in 3:9, he tells us the same story. It's twice now, you know, in two chapters. He says, behold, I'll make them of the synagogue of Satan, which say they are Jews and are not. These are people that say they are Jews, but they are not. And they're not. They're descended from Esau. That's Uncle Esau. They're not descended from Judah. Now, there are people in the world that are descended from Judah that are real Jews. But those people don't call themselves Jews. They're not trying to deceive you. Queen Elizabeth, she's a Jew. She's descended from Judah, from the Pharaoh's line. I, Georgie Gordon, I'm descended from Judah through the Zerah line. There are in the world, well, I can't tell you how many in the world, but I'll tell you how many is in the United States. There's about 63 million Jews in the United States descended from Pharaohs or Zerah. That's in the United States. You Canadians up there, there's only 30 million of you. But of the white Anglo-Saxons in Canada, most of you people are descended from Judah, came from Germany. And who was it that went to war against Germany? The real Jews are the Germans, descended from the Pharaoh's line. And the fake Jews, the pretenders, are these Edomite Jews. Hey, do you see something coming down here? Now, I didn't write this. I just wanted to point it out here that God himself tells you that there's some people over here that are going to be calling themselves Jews. They're going to be calling themselves the chosen people, but they're not. They're liars. Well, you know, listen to this. I'll make them to come and worship before your feet and know that I've loved you. He said, behold, I will make them of the synagogue of Satan, which say they're Jews and are not, but do lie. These people are liars. They're not telling you the truth. Who told you? Well, God himself told you. Well, let's see. We'll have to leave it right about here. I'm going to have to tell you that the books that you're looking for now are written by Gail Ripplinger. Three books, Hazardous Materials, New Age Bible Versions, and Which Bible is God's Word? You can get one of those and get all three of them from AV Publications Corporation. And the phone number is 1-800-435-4535. Again, that's 1-800-435-4535. Hey, I'm out of time. I'm going to have to remind you that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States and around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals but by pre-arrangement. Now, the Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly and has a radio log schedule and archives. Now, all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. That's for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. All right, time's up. I've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.